Good evening. You are listening to Three Moves Ahead. I am Len. I am your host, and I am joined this week by Aftermath's Luke Plunkett.
Good morning, everybody.
By our friend, freelance writer Ian Boudreau.
Hey, everybody.
And our friend Mike Williams.
Hello, hello.
And our special guest for this week, freelance writer Ruth Cassidy.
Good evening.
And we have a full panel this week to discuss Millennia, the recent... People got mad at me for calling it a Civ-like, when I feel like that's a pretty obvious point of comparison. But it's a Civ, it's a historical 4X. It's a Civ-like from C Prompt Games and Paradox Interactive. That I think suffice to say we had some strong feelings about across the board, probably.
It sucks. It's okay to say. It's okay to lead with that, I think. It sucks.
I was trying to rank like where we are in terms of our negativity. I think Luke is like right up.
Ian are down at the bottom.
Yeah, I hate this game. I hate this game.
Let's talk about what it is first. Ian, do you want to tell us what is Millennia?
Sure. So it's a historical 4X game, very much in the vein of Civilization. The big point of departure, or I guess the big new idea that it introduces, is kind of divergent ages that you can kind of split off from established history, like the Stone Age and Iron Age, and potentially, if you fulfill certain conditions, move into an age of heroes, or what's the steampunk age called?
Ether.
The age of ether. That's right. Yeah. So things like that can happen, but you can also have crisis ages, like the age of plague that happen, and that's kind of dependent on the technology tree. What else? I mean, apart from that, it stays pretty close to the Civilization playbook, including, you know, making improvements to the tiles in your provinces around your cities, moving little armies around, although they can stack up to four or five, depending on the your technology research, I guess, so far.
Yeah, it's anyway, like Civ 6, where they
allow
you to make like fleets and armies eventually. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's kind of the back of the box pitch, I guess. It's just a matter of how well any of that actually comes together.
Right. Luke, I think you're probably the most negative out of us, though certainly not the only detractor. So, like, what is it? What got under your skin about this game?
Well,
pick a thing.
How long have we got? This podcast isn't going to go for like an hour and a half or 2 hours. Wait.
So since I'm mid-range, I'll start.
Okay, go for it.
The first thing that really bothered me, let's talk about the ages, is entering an age is dependent entirely on the first civilization that gets there.
Yeah.
So even if you were aiming to, say, switch to a different age, if another civilization gets to, say, the Age of Plague before you do, then everyone goes into the Age of Plague, no matter what you were doing, which means your strategy always has to be like blitz through research to get to the ages first, because otherwise some of the ages, like this is probably when I really started souring. I hit the Age of Plague because I was playing and Germany got to the Age of Plague before me, and I had enough of, I forget whatever resource it was, to automatically clear the plague in any region that it popped up, but it was so tedious the entire time, just grinding my teeth through the Age of Plague. It wasn't actually hurting me. Again, like anytime a turn would happen, one or two regions would get plagued and I would clean them immediately. But the age itself, like it lowers your civilization, and just the tedium of cleaning each region was so annoying. And
yeah, you take a one-third population hit just off the top as soon as you enter the Age of Plague. It sucks.
I think that the Age of Plague is like interesting in that it's awful. That's how I'm just going to go through that sentence, because I don't personally think it's a bad design decision by itself to let whoever brings in the next age dictate the age. Like, it doesn't necessarily feel good, but I think that can be interesting. Right. But the balance of the Age of Plague itself, that it both like knocks off a third of your population, the technologies for the age itself, I don't know if they are inherently more expensive or if they just are effectively more expensive because you take that population hit. But I know that when I was in it, it took me like 60 turns to get into it and then like 80 turns to get out or something. And I am slightly pulling those numbers out of my head, so please nobody like put those into a spreadsheet and judge me by them. But I spent such a big chunk of my time just dragging myself.
Okay, we had a little bit of a technical hiccup, but Ruth, you were talking about very historically dragging yourself through the Age of Plague, I believe.
Yeah, so like it took at least for me a really long time. And so when I, on that particular playthrough, I actually timed out on 500, like turn 500. And I think it was just because I just, the plague era, I wasn't able to catch up with myself essentially after that. It was so slow to pull myself out of that it doomed the rest of the campaign. And that is the sort of thing that can be rebalanced, but it feels awful at the time. It is not good. Like it is beyond the kind of, this is an interesting kind of not fun of someone else leading the new age. It is just like, oh God, I have spent tens and tens and tens of turns moving a little plague doctor from place to place and clicking remove plague.
See, that would be even worse.
Yeah, isn't that the story of this game, though? Like the fact that this is a game with like four or five really good ideas that they probably wrote down on paper first, and then the idea of having to build a whole game around them with other systems that those five good ideas had to like intermesh with and function just aren't there. And so every time you look at these good ideas, like progressing through ages or having one of them be an Age of Plague where everyone dies and gets sick, it's like, that's really cool. How does that actually get implemented and work in an enjoyable or at least interesting way? And like, it doesn't. And that's why this is a bad video game. Like,
I wish there was like age influence, like say Germany enters the Age of Plague. Maybe I don't, or the Age of Plague sort of influences me, but there's no acknowledgement of my own technical situation. Like, if my sanitation is far better than theirs, maybe the plague shouldn't hit me as hard. Or perhaps I have a stronger military, or I don't have open borders. There's like, you just enter certain ages, and that is the situation for everyone, regardless of where you are in your specific capabilities. And it just doesn't feel good. And the only way to blunt that, again, the only strategy is to just always be ahead in research of everybody else.
And that means like picking specifically the cheapest technologies, which, you know, it'll save you five turns or something per tech. So you have to pick whatever three you need to advance to the next age, or four as it gets further into the game. But, you know, like you wind up playing in a very, very specific way in order to stay the tech leader. And then you end up with these problems like, well, now I haven't researched. It's, you know, it's the year 900 AD and I haven't figured out what construction or horses are.
I feel like it takes away kind of some of the playstyle choice that you would have in other 4X games, where like, if I don't want to focus on science, I don't have to. But in Millennia, I feel like I have to focus on science, because if I'm not focusing on science, like, I'm never going to get to pick what the next age is. And that kind of feels bad. Like, to me, I would even go beyond Luke saying this is a good idea surrounded by bad stuff, which there are some of those in here. I would say Ages specifically is like, it feels like a first draft of a kind of good idea. Like,
yeah,
the idea that these things could happen, the idea that you could have an Age of Blood, or like, I think late game, I've never seen it, but there's supposed to be one with like Skynet where like Terminators try to take over the world or something. That's a really cool idea to shake up like the civilization formula, but like the way that you progress to these ages just feels like a first draft to me. This feels like,
yeah,
I think the presence of the age, like the ages themselves are that though. Like, I remember when they first showed this game off, it was like, that was the huge thing they were selling. And I was really confused by it because I was like, I don't know what any of this is going to mean. Like, what are these things if they're also sitting alongside regular technologically defined ages? It's like, it's like they had this idea. This is what I meant about the ideas, is like they had this, oh, what if we didn't have a Bronze Age? What if we had an Age of Heroes? And it's like, that would be really cool if that's what you did, but you've got both. And it's really strange to play through where like if you never get to define the ages, you can play through most of this game without triggering an age. You may just go through the sort of classic Civ progression tree of like technological, you know, you'll go to a medieval and you go to a renaissance, you go to a modern, whatever. The age is branching off, like they're an alternative to a technological era, and in some ways they're defined by them and in other ways they're not. I feel like it's just really weird having them sit side by side. It's like you could have just had this sort of mythological alternate timeline ages thing. Would have been really interesting if that's how you defined the different possible sort of branching timelines of human history. Or you could have done the Civ thing where you just go through human history. Having them both sitting next to each other just is continually really confusing. And like, it's really tough to weigh up whether I actually want to do this or not beyond the novelty of there being like an age.
And speaking of like ideas to like hang your hat on, and this is where the comparisons to humankind sort of come in that like the idea here of being able to shift the ages is cool. In the same way, humankind's idea of being able to create this melange civilization from a bunch of different ones is cool. But like in practice, while you're playing it and in connection with the other civilizations you're playing with, and humankind, like part of the issue there was once you got to the next level of civilization, only one player in a group could pick like, you know, a specific style of civilization. So if you were aiming for that for your personal play style and someone else got there first, like that was just out of bounds for you. And Ages is the same way in that there's just too much influence for other civilizations on your civilization per se. And it takes sort of your own personal play style out of it. And that's like, as soon as I kept hitting Ages, some games, like Luke said, are fine. Like I'm just playing Civ. We're going through the normal ages. And some games you end up just so far off the beaten path that you even wanted to go to because of other like AI civilizations.
Yeah, I also compared it to At the Gates, which I also feel like, you know, John Shaver's At the Gates was a case of thinking about all the cool ways that you could sort of evolve the civilization formula without first having a base layer that is equivalent in quality to civilization, which I think is something that is sort of a consistent problem with other studios that are trying to do a Civ killer or a Civ like, you know, it's easy to take for granted how good Firaxis is to us in a lot of ways, even though, you know, everyone has their favorite. I like Civ 5 a lot more than Civ 6. I spent plenty of time complaining about Civ 6, but like comparing it, it's like, yeah, I would definitely rather play Civ 6 than most of the other, you know, Civ-like games.
But doesn't it, it goes past that, doesn't it? Like, you don't just think, oh, I'd rather be playing Civ 5 than this. You're like, I'd rather be playing Civ 2 than this. And it's, which is funny, like, haha, it's a joke because it's a really old game. But if you, like, even the original Civ games, you get a greater appreciation of how elegant their designs were and how they were able to display the necessary information required to immerse you in running a civilization to the player, when these Civ-like competitors in the year of our Lord 2024 can't do that. But we were playing games in the mid-90s that could. And that's one of the hugest issues I find with this game especially, is that it's like just, it wants to be a different Civ game, but it doesn't understand the source material. Like it's copying, it's looking over its shoulder and it's copying certain elements of Civ without sort of ever nailing any of the progression or ownership or personality of Civ at the same time. And it's like, that's one of the main reasons this game isn't just like a bad game, but it's, I'm sure we'll get onto this later, but it's really just unenjoyable to be around this game at all. Like, I do not enjoy spending any time in this game's world or using its menus or moving around or talking to people or like anything. And that stuff's some of the simplest joy of even the oldest Civ games. It's just like navigating the space and talking to leaders. This game just has like none of that. And I realize I'm, like we've said, I'm probably more critical about this game than other people, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but those issues do like persist, like improving your cities. It just, oh, from even just a UI perspective, like you're on a city, you click on a tile within that city's influence, and you want to select one improvement. You have to like click through menus to get to those things. And it's just annoying. It just doesn't feel good. As opposed to like when I would get to later turns, I would just say like, just auto, like just pick the next, like it has an automatic improvement button.
It does.
It's not automatic improvement. It's like suggested improvements or something like that. And so I would just like, when I get to later, latter halves of games, I would just, yeah, whatever your suggested improvement is, I'll do that.
Oh, like the build genie or something. I remember mentioned in a tooltip, and I never found it again because it was sort of like three different ways you can access improvement tiles. And I'm like, these menus upon menus, and I've gone. You've lost me.
Yeah, who thought nested menus was a good idea for tile build improvements? It's just not. Show me all of the improvements I can do.
It did feel slightly. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Ruth.
I was just saying, it did feel slightly mad that compared to sort of other games where you have these big shiny resource icons, like you have your wheat, your olives, and you can never just click on it and be like, I want the improvement that gets me my wheat, or, you know, the improvement that will get, like, let me build a farm or plantation, the thing that will exploit the resource that you've put a big shiny icon on. You have achieved the UI of big shiny icon. Please let me click it. Let me click the icon.
Well, and despite the icons that are there, this is maybe a separate topic that we can discuss, but like that disorganization, like it does feel like you're drowning in information most of the time, but none of it's organized in a way that's helpful.
Yeah, it's never streamlined or presented to you in a way that you can easily find the information that you want to find. You're like, oh, I'm not making enough money. How do I fix that? You know, or I'm not growing enough, or my sanitation's bad. How do I fix that? And it's like, there's a hover over, and then there's a menu, and then there's another menu, and then there's something that's grayed out because I haven't unlocked it yet. But why are you showing me this as a thing if I can't do it yet? Like, it's.
Yeah.
There's even like the hard selection. Like, if we're going to get into like nitty gritty UI gripes, like the fact that like when you click anywhere with a left click, it like hard selects that tile. And that selection won't go away until you click on another tile. Like, I found little stuff like that annoying. But even just, like, there's so much stuff that is so easy to miss. And like, I'm going to conscript everybody here to defend me against the Reddit peanut gallery. But like, I published in my review that it was not possible to chop down forests until the information age, which we published a correction. Apparently, there's an industrial tech that is non-essential a few ages before that, where you can cut down forests that I never saw. So I ended up in, like, there are skippable techs in Civ, yes, but it's not like you're not going to end up in a place where you have ships and planes and, like, tanks, but you haven't discovered forestry yet, which is, like, it's not only very easy to do in this game. I remember I sent a message to our 3MA Discord, like, did I miss the ability to cut down forests? Because it's like 1955 and I still can't cut down forests. And nobody had found it at that point. It's like it encourages you to just, like, take your three techs that you need to get to the next stage and go. Like, it doesn't really encourage you to loop back, and, like, nothing is a prerequisite to anything else. So you can, like,
Can't go back. Like, because of the age system and the way it works, it's not, I'm not saying impossible, like, you can do it, but you are actively handicapping yourself going back to a previous age to pick up techs you missed.
You can be in, like, the age of rocketry and have, like, submarines, but you're still using, like, tech one, like, warriors with clubs as your main infantry unit, and then just upgrade directly to modern infantry. Like, you don't ever have to have, like, researched pikemen to get machine guns. There's this, like, really weird disconnect just with how the, you know, overly free the tech card system is, and stuff like, I didn't think there was a way to preview, like, a battle result. Like, in Civ, there's always, you could see a preview of who's probably going to win. Somebody was like, well, no, you just have to hold down right click. And I'm like, well, it never told me that, and I never would have done that. So I don't know. it's like, today I learned. Okay, thanks for the tip. I wish the game had let me know that was the case.
That would have taken away the thrill of watching the battles play out.
I was gonna say, there's a tool tip where it's like, oh, you have like 100% chance of winning, or a 20% chance of drawing or whatever, which is a hover tool tip. So I have no idea what the hold down right click is. That's also just an entirely separate function. But also, it does not always calculate correctly. It seems to get really confused once you add in planes.
I'm so excited we're talking about combat now, because this is of all the things I came on this show to shit on this game for, combat is probably in the top five. It's a long list, just for reference, but man,
You don't like it when the militia runs out of the city walls one at a time, hits somebody, and runs and back
clubs
in.
Someone. Oh, so
look, Monty Python. Yeah.
If you haven't had the joy of playing this game yet, combat in Millennia is resolved by two armies running into each other in the field. And up to now, this sounds fine. That's how you would expect it to happen. What you then get in the middle of the screen, it's not a full screen, it's like a pop-up window, is you get an animated, I'm going to say, that's portrayal, and that's being generous. Yeah, and saying animated is generous too.
Yeah.
You get a rudimentary portrayal of this battle taking place, where one army is on one side and the other army is on the other side, and they're represented by, like, four dudes per unit, and they're always dudes, and they're always the same dudes. And just what happens is, in the most 1996 way you can, like, just imagine Heroes of Might and Magic game from, like, 1996 running on an old VGA monitor, and you're 99% of the way to understanding what this looks like. The most shoddily animated sequence you've seen in a major video game release in forever, where these dudes just run out, ignoring any type of terrain, any type of fortification bonus, anything, and we'll just hit each other randomly, and you'll just watch units take damage, and then they stop, and then the battle's over, and you sit there just thinking, why is this in the game? Like, what is going on here? Like, A, this is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to have to sit through this in a game that people have paid money for.
It's just unclear what they're trying to, like, because what is being conveyed here at
it
all?
It didn't have to be there. It doesn't have to be there. There are so many other ways they could have resolved a battle and shown the player how that battle was resolved. And, like, the decision to put this in the game, just, like, I'm flabbergasted.
And you will go through a ton of combat because barbarians in, like, the first, like, two to three tiers of ages are everywhere, and if you do not clear those camps, they will spawn so many barbarians.
Yep. And so what you guys were talking about combat, and I'm sitting here thinking, wow, you guys did a lot more fighting than I did because I avoided combat at all costs. Like, even when I was at war with other civs, if they weren't actively attacking my settlements, I was like, oh, you can pillage that place. I don't care, man. I'm just not going to subject myself to this any more than I have to.
That town. I don't like because, that town. It's because,
but not only, like, I'm it's gross. Like, and it's gross. Like, it's not nice to look at, but it's also just strategically joyless. There's nothing you do to impact the result of battles either. Is you get these stacks of armies and they just go at each other and it animates randomly. I don't get to assign like an RPG like turn order. I don't get to put spears at the front, archers at the back. I don't get to like, it's just that. It's just, if you've got four units and the AI's got four units, they're just going to hit each other in the face randomly and assign damage. And at the end of it, one side's probably going to have won. Maybe sometimes they do, other times they don't. And it's like, the entire thing from top to bottom is like just the most like embarrassing to look at, but also joyless to play combat. Like I can remember in a game like this, like ever, not just now, like ever.
Does anybody know, was there, could you discern a pattern of any kind? Like nope. Any like rubric no. by which the units chose the enemy unit that they were going to attack?
Nope.
I couldn't figure out what
tribesmen hitting infantry, like barbarian leaders hitting crossbow, like it just roll a dice, man. Bedlam. That's what happens. Yeah.
I read a developer diary that did explain like the essentially the priorities that went into like the actual the priorities inside the game, not their design priorities, like you know, support units will do X. Line units will do Y. And this is a thing that sort of scratches at my brain because I read, obviously, the developer diaries that were on Steam a little while before I actually got to playing the game. So I had this sort of background kind of fuzzy from memory understanding what's going in. And it made me realize that just none of this information is in the game. Even when you go through the encyclopedia in every tooltip, I got through to most of the game and realized I had no idea what the win conditions were. I knew that at some point there would be a victory age, but you can't scroll forward and see what a victory age might be that you could work towards. Like other than, you know, by default, I'll win if I kill everyone who isn't me. I was like, I know that there's like a utopia age. I know that there's an AI age, which I understand to be a bad thing, but I'm playing 90% of this game being like, I have no idea how I win. I have no idea what I'm actually building towards. And the fact that they have the information about, you know, what a line unit is doing, what your archers are meant to be doing, how they're so that you could make interesting tactical decisions. And then they don't give it to you. And I'm like, you can't expect players to go back and scroll through 10 Steam news posts to find the developer diary to explain how a game's mechanic works. If you don't put it anywhere in the game, and I'm not saying you have to put it right in front of me, but at least put it in the in-game encyclopedia. It should be readable somewhere.
Well, I mean, you do have an in-game encyclopedia. I mean,
and there is an in-game encyclopedia.
There is one.
It doesn't explain things.
Yeah, yeah. It won't tell you about ages you haven't been to yet. I guess because I wanted to keep it kind of secret, maybe, but.
So but even after you've unlocked them, so you're doing like a second playthrough, it still doesn't tell you. It's still like, oh, this is a new game, so you don't know anything. It's like, but I do know things, so just tell me.
Yeah, well, it's like, so like if you just follow like the default historical path, it basically defaults to a space race victory. But then there's also like a mercy rule, as I described it, that like the game just ends after 500 turns. After performance has gotten so bad that you're waiting almost 2 minutes between turns. Because what happened in my first campaign is France was kicking everybody's ass in science for the entire campaign. And they got to the space age in like 1830 or something. And then they never built the stuff to do the space race victory. And it just timed out on turn 500. Like they forgot that they were supposed to do their space victory or something. I don't know.
I think you can only, you only get a victory if you're in a victory age. So if they started the space race project and then you didn't enter the space race age, then they're not going to get a space race win.
Yeah, essentially. I don't know what happened there.
The victory conditions are shared, which is also like, I think that's interesting because you can see someone going towards a space victory and be like, well, no, I'm going to take you into a different age and eat your victory. That's interesting.
It is.
It doesn't really present these options because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know that these are options.
Right.
Like that we've all spent this much time with a game and we're going, oh, is that how that works? Is that what that age is meant to do? How do you win the game?
That seems to have just been like every day since this game came out. It was like, oh yeah, I wish I had known that when I was reviewing it. And, you know, obviously that.
I do have one good thing that I like about this.
Move into that. What did we like?
It is just the domain system. I like the idea of it, that you can build improvements and buildings that feed into different categories like government or like exploration or warfare or engineering, and they will slowly accumulate points, and then you can spend those points to directly build related improvements or units or whatever. Like, that feels like a good idea. If you're doing engineering stuff, then you can summon builders or, you know, speed up a building. Or if you're doing exploration stuff, you can create a settler, or government stuff. You know, you can switch to a different government. Like that feels good, and it does work within the context of Millennia.
I think of all the ideas,
like none of, like, yeah. There's a bunch of stuff that happens that doesn't make any sense with the currency that you have available. Like, you know, you've got warfare points. And with warfare points, you can heal units, or you can, I think in some cases, you can like summon immortals if you have the right cult or national spirit unlocked. But then, like, you can also summon an army with government points or as a culture power. Like, it's all over the place with this stuff. And then, like, when you go into a plague, an age of plague, you know, there's exploration points, and those are normally used to, like, I think you can spawn a scout. That makes sense. But then you use exploration points to cleanse plague tiles too.
Which is what I was doing. Like, yeah, when we were talking about the Age of Plague, that's what I was doing.
Complete Calvin ball. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
It is though. Like, of all the, like, if this is a game defined by good ideas implemented in the worst way possible, like, this is, like, I said this, in my impressions of the game I wrote on Aftermath, this is the closest it comes to actually having a good idea that works. Because I do agree. Like, I did really like this idea. I like the idea that there was an engine building element to this game that sort of existed separate to the map and was kind of more representative of the way I wanted to play the game. Like, it's the way I had this single sort of toolbar on the left that was just slowly building up all the points I needed to do to my own little governmental changes, my own little military additions, my own little things. It felt really good as like a little sort of bonsai tree / you know, vegetable garden thing I just constantly tending to really nicely. But like, it's then completely undermined by the Aegis system just cutting it off at the kneecaps constantly, and then half the stuff that it's building points towards being terrible and things it's I didn't want to do. Like, oh well, I don't want to do military stuff because I'm avoiding combat at all costs. So that was ultimately useless. But like, so I'm not saying this idea worked, but it is the closest the game comes to having an idea that works.
So yeah, I think, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think my general feeling on Millennia is that, like, the stuff that I don't like about it, I think could, you know, theoretically, is stuff that could be interesting. Like, the domains, I basically, what Luke just said, let's just go with that. Sorry, I fumbled all of those sentences. But like, I feel like I am the most sort of middling positive, despite I think the fact that I've said a lot of negative things, mm-hmm. because a lot of my gripes are things that really could be fixed and balanced. And like, I can think of like three things off the top of my head that I don't actually like about the domain system.
Do you think that's us giving it too much credit though? Like, like, because we're all sort of very into these genre of games and we look at the framework of a Civ-like game and can sort of connect our own dots, we're sort of saying, oh, this is a good idea, this is a good idea. But like, if the five of us sat down in a pub with a bunch of napkins, we could have our own good ideas for a Civ game too. Like, everyone has good ideas for a Civ game. Like, everyone out there has good ideas for a video game. The difference between everybody having ideas and a good video game is, it's hard work turning good ideas into a functional and enjoyable video game. And I feel like this game's only sort of positive thing being, well, it had some good ideas, they just got to fix them. It's like, that's what video game development is. Game design is. It's turning those five good ideas into a complex and functional and rewarding and satisfying video game. And like, this game fumbles every single one of them. And so like, I don't feel like we can be as optimistic towards like, oh, maybe they can patch it. Like, I bet they can't, because this whole game sucks. So why would they suddenly develop the ability to create these beautiful, organic, intermeshed systems when like, well, no, this was the game they made and every single part of it's bad. Like, well, I know, yeah, that sounds really harsh, but like, I feel like... I do a lot of board game stuff as well, and board games is a space where systems are a lot more bare. Like, there's less of them, but they're a lot more transparent and you see the engine of a game running. And I feel like that's very transferable to strategy games because you see a lot of the same systems at play. And so I did the same thing even in my written piece. I'm like, it had some good ideas. But like, the week since, like, thinking about it over the last few days and reading other people's reviews and stuff, I'm like, I've somehow got even more critical of it because like, I don't think saying like, this is horrible to the developers. I'm sorry that like, I'm not usually this negative towards a game at such a fundamental level, but like, this is a bad video game on every level. And I think saying it's got good ideas is giving it too much credit.
This is how I got while we were talking about it in Discord. I feel I probably started like middling. And then as we kept talking about
more
it,
more and more annoyed.
Small things kept bothering me, like vassal cities. I'm like, what is going on with this system? Like, it from the tooltips, it seems to be bad to turn a vassal into a full city, but I don't know why. And just leaving them as vassals just doesn't feel particularly good or interesting.
Well, they also develop so slowly as vassals, right? Too. Yeah. So, yeah.
So like, I'm like the tooltip is like, if you turn them into cities, then you'll have to control them and they can get unruly and all this stuff. And I'm like, that sounds bad, but you leave them as vassals and they're just sitting there doing nothing. Like, they do grow eventually, but I don't have control over that growth at all. Like,
you can't build improvements in your vassals. You can't. You can't really do anything. Yeah.
There's like a domain power that I think increases the prosperity, which increases the rate that they become a full city. But yeah, it's another thing where like, I really like the idea of that. I really like the idea that when you found a city, it's this vassal that you kind of have soft power, but not direct control over. And that maybe it would be a valid gameplay choice to like, just play the game that way. Like, I'm going to have my capital and then a bunch of vassal cities, and maybe that would be an interesting, different way to play. I loved, like, Venice in Civ 5 is one of my favorite civilizations in any civilization game, because it was literally the one city challenge codified into game mechanics, and I love playing tall like that. But yeah, it's like, okay, so I do want to name the things that I do really actually like about Millennia, as our mandated positivity segment just became more negativity, but they still come with asterisks. So I do really like the idea of production chains in a Civ game. The fact that I can like harvest wheat and then I can build a tile improvement that turns that wheat into flour, and then I can build a tile improvement that turns that flour into bread. And that chain is going to create more food than if I had just built three wheat farms. Like, that's kind of cool. I wish the trade was more flexible. It seems like each city can only have a trade route to one other place. Again, maybe this is something where there's a feature that I missed that lets you have more than one. But it seems like the domestic export or whatever, it's like, oh, you pick one city and then you're only exporting to that city, which really limits what you can do with having like your specialized bread baking city that would feed the rest of the country or whatever. I also like, again, the idea of the city needs. I think they work really well, especially in the early game, where like your population growth is based on what percentage of the food needs are you currently providing. And then eventually, once it gets big enough, you have to add sewage. I think it breaks down a little bit. Like, electricity makes sense, but like when you get to the point where it's like your population isn't growing anymore because you're not providing enough ideology, it's like, I say you should have cut it off there. And like, weirdly, healthcare is not one of them. That's another one that would have made sense, is like if like late game you have to provide healthcare to keep your population growing. But no, it's like,
no, they need nightclubs. They need nightclubs.
Yeah.
No healthcare.
Yeah. Information, yeah, also, eventually.
Nightclubs, which, like, reduce ideology, right? That's another thing.
More smartphones should lead to less babies, I think. Like that would make more sense to me. But those are two ideas that I think would be cool in a better game.
And again, you run into this organization issue with the, like, it's not like the production chains, which are a really neat idea.
Yeah.
But figuring out, like, there's not a place to see where all those tile improvements, like how they work and what interacts with, you know, the different resources. So, for instance, early on, I was, I think I had olive oils, or I had olives and grapes in one territory. And I thought, well, this is going to be easy. I need a press, right? For the olive oil, that should probably work with the grapes too. I need to press the grapes to make wine, except no, you need vats to process grapes into wine. That's fine. But like, I had to hunt down like that in that information individually per resource. And like, it's just not foregrounded nearly enough to be able to make like the kinds of, like, to be able to go through a turn flow the way that you'd want to. Like, I found myself just hunting through that forest of nested pop-up menus or hover tooltips, just to try to figure out which improvements I was supposed to be building towards and which I could like double up on and stuff. It really was way too cumbersome for what it is. And I don't know, that, again, really solid idea, but kind of just hamstrung by the execution.
Yeah. Like, I think what I say, you know, that I thought it was kind of stuff that, you know, it could be kind of rebalanced. That's not sort of me coming in a direction from sort of, oh, like the devs will fix it and it will be better in a year. So much as like, I think there is good stuff and it, or at least interesting stuff, and it gets buried under sort of the menus and the awful UI and kind of the not sharing information, which this is me pivoting to saying a thing I like somehow. I actually think the tile economy, as you put it in your review, then I think it's interesting because, well, at least I can see what they're trying to do that's interesting, because there's a point where you go from, at least in one of my reviews, I went from having an empire type government, I think it was, to communism, which doesn't have a religious need. It's an entirely secular government type. So I had to go through all my tiles and find my religious scribes, I think, that print all the Bibles to fulfill religious needs. And I tore down my religious buildings and put them in their place, you know, brutalist apartments to produce ideology. And I'm like, this is on purpose. This isn't by accident. They knew that at some point I was going to have to, like, tear down, like, deconstruct these buildings. And you're doing the same thing where, you know, in the early game, you might build a lot of farms and then you set up your bread factory and you're like, okay, well, I don't need all of this grassland to be farmed, so I'm going to remove all my farms. And I'm moving from, you know, a more agrarian kind of region to an industrialized one. And I think that's interesting. I don't think they lead you to that well, but I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. My issue with it was like, to me, like, this is even still a reason that I like Civ 5 more than Civ 6, because I think Civ 6's districts, well, I like them better than the way Millennia does things, created too much sprawl on the map. I don't really like having Coruscant, like I said in my review. Like, I don't like having urban infrastructure on every available tile to the point where I'm having to do what you're describing and, like, tear out stuff from earlier ages that I don't need anymore to swap in stuff that I need now. Like, the fact that, like, a city takes up one hex, and then also something called a school district takes up, like, one whole entire hex. Like, that to me is, like, that should go in the city. Like, I like having my nice little Civ 5. There's the city center, and then you've got kind of farms and mines. You've got, like, this rural area around it that is very clearly and distinctly rural. And you might put, like, some urban stuff around it, like neighborhoods or whatever. But, like, I don't like when I'm, like, halfway through the game and I'm just looking at this map that's just a sprawl of kind of nonsense. Like, there's a tile improvement called a brain trust that, like, you need to generate specialists, which is, like, I talked in the review about the fact that education, specialists, and knowledge are three different things that are all produced by different buildings is so weird to me.
And also information. Education, yes, and information, and, like, knowledge, and specialists.
They're all disconnected. And just, like, we talked a little bit about this with the unit models, but, like, I hate being this negative. I really hate being this negative about anything. But the graphics are embarrassingly bad.
All, like, right.
You'll have,
yes.
You will have I'm gonna build a township that increases the level of my region, and, like, the houses are, like, being built out into the river, the nearby river. Like, they're just, like, half sunk. There's, like, paved roads where, like, the textures don't match up, and it's, like, it looks like it's like a compressed JPEG on one tile, and then it turns into, like, this sharper texture on the next tile. And then, like, the unit model, like, I think, like, the counter-terrorists from, like, Counter-Strike 1.6 in, like, 2000 look better than, like, the modern infantry models in this game. Like,
okay, this game... This is my number one problem with this game. Of any systemic flaws it has, and they are many, we have discussed them. This is going to sound really shallow, but this game is just really not pleasant to be around at any given moment. And that's, like I said in my piece, that it just reminds me of a 2011 iPad game.
yeah.
And that's the overall impression I get is that, like I said, this is going to sound shallow because I'm talking about visual stuff, but I actually think this is really fundamentally important. I think one thing that a lot of Civ-like competitors don't realize, and you could probably make this argument for strategy games as a whole, is that they grossly underestimate the importance of, using air quotes here, graphics. And I'm not talking about fidelity. I'm just talking about a coherent art style and something that is at the very least possible to want to spend significant amounts of your spare time to be around. That can be, we've talked about how this game fails in so many ways to take lessons from the game series that it's trying to sort of copy from. The biggest whiff it makes is visually and presentation wise, is that so many of these games completely underestimate the degree to which charm and personality play a role in Civ's success. And by that, I don't just mean, like, Civ games always have a really nice world map. They always have really nice water. They have really nice mountains. They have nice colors. They have nice menus that look, that all the visuals are coherent all the way through them. And spending time in this place, and it's Civ, we've all spent a lot of time there, is a really nice place to be. You can spend 10, 12, 14 hours a day playing Civ, and you never once go, this is an ugly video game, or I don't want to be on this map. Like, it's a nice place to be. Playing Millennia is like, I don't want to be here at all. Like, this place sucks. It's not nice to look at. But it's also completely lacking in any kind of, like, personality or charm. And one of the biggest problems I have is that these games are so reliant on, like, a feeling that you are competing against somebody Like you are a person with beliefs and goals and ideas playing this game. One of the things that the best, and I'm not just talking about Civ, Old World does this really well as well, is it in even like, you know, unrelated games like Crusader Kings, they personalize your opponents and you like it makes you invested in either dealing with or fighting against your opponents. If you haven't had the joy of playing Millennia, you should know that you deal with a flag in this game. A static flag. Yeah.
And they're
flag.
Not good flags. They nope, look like a flag bad. That somebody made in high school Photoshop
yeah,
class.
Wikipedia like, flags are 100 times cleaner and better than this. And so these games that are so like when you play Civ, you get the cool. I'm not saying they need to have this level of fidelity, but you get these cool leader screens where your opponents have some degree of personality, like, oh, this guy hates me, or I'm going to trade with this guy because they seem nice. You know, they've got a nice facial animation, that kind of stuff. It just completely robs the game of any of that. And making it worse is that your diplomatic negotiations are sort of reduced to these really limited canned responses that you both give and receive from your opponents. And it's like you never once in this game ever feel like you are part of a larger world and that you are sharing this world with other factions who can be dealt with and spoken to and feel in any way human at all, which is like the biggest shortcoming of a game that's supposed to be depicting human civilization is it has no humanity in it at all. And it's like, if you only want to explore this game's systems, that's cool for you. But like, you're an accountant, like this as a video game, it just, that's its biggest shortcoming out of more than anything else. I think we've spoken about is that it just has no humanity to it whatsoever. Which
and like, this kind of, oh, go ahead, Mike.
And I was saying, like, the meanest thing I could say is playing this made me look more favorably on humankind.
Yes.
Which
yes.
was a yep. commitment for me.
Yeah, exactly yep. the same.
No, I didn't like humankind.
I was just going to say really quick, the term I used when I played the demo was aggressively uncharismatic.
Yep.
And that's exactly how I would describe the art direction for this. But yeah, Ruth, what about it was it that you liked about humankind? I'm curious.
So it depends on the Forex, I guess. Yeah. But I like my default approach isn't I want to wipe everyone else off the map with military force. So... and maybe that's because my first Civ game was Civ 6, which it doesn't default to you have to be, you know, the biggest military. So humankind's diplomacy system, but it's very the words that coming to my mind is narrativized. Like you get this kind of breakdown of sort of this person is feeling needy. They're feeling dependent on you because they rely on you for important trade materials. And then I'm like, okay, so I can push this relationship. I can go, okay, if you need my iron, I can push you around. I can go, like, I can push stupid grievances and say, give me your territory. Whereas if I can see that someone else is much stronger than me and they feel, you know, disdainful towards me or whatever, I'm not going to make stupid power plays. And that's a dynamic that I really like because, like, my intrinsic motivation isn't from the very beginning, I just want to build a big army and push everyone else off the map. So when you put in that kind of interpersonal push and pull of just sort of this person's really reliant on you or this person feels hostile towards you and it's informed by your trade relationship and your proximity and your kind of influence of your religion on them and your kind of your cultural exports to them and vice versa. And that's a key point. Remind me to come back to that. And vice versa. that is a really interesting network to me. So I genuinely really enjoy humankind. I feel like there are people who be like, I think humankind is okay. Like, no, I actively like humankind. I play it in my free time. I think it's good.
This is a safe space.
That's one
okay.
of the things. Thank you. That's one of the things that really drives it for me. Like, I know kind of other people will look to be like, oh, the AI aren't very aggressive. They are not willing to come at you sort of guns blazing from the off if you happen to be a little bit weaker. Which is true, entirely fair, if that's your intrinsic motivation when playing 4X. It doesn't happen to be mine. at least in this style. There are other games where I do go in and I'm like, yes, the most important thing is that I'm moving my little armies around, but not this kind.
It's funny because I think that one of the games that is about pushing little armies around are a series. And I mentioned this in the Rock, Paper, Shotgun review, but I think Total War handles this better and in more the way that you describe Humankind, Ruth, where you kind of get this relational idea of where you stand with somebody when you open up negotiations. Like you can look at another faction and see the 9 things that you've done that have pissed them off real bad.
Yeah.
And that's why they don't want it. So like getting that, but that like it really pulls you into the game and it makes it, it creates consequences and history for you to kind of refer back to and think, oh yeah, these things that I did actually mattered. And there are people around this map and in this world who noticed it and either liked it or didn't. I think that's a really, it's a smart thing that Total War has done, whether it's, you know, I don't think it's always worked as well as they wanted it to, but it's there. And I think it's missing from Millennia in an important
way. I will say, Humankind, I do not hate. Humankind was disappointing to me.
Yeah.
And that's purely because of the context it sort of exists in, and that Endless Legend was a very high point for me in terms of Civ likes. And Humankind is not, and Humankind was also coming after Old World, which did a lot more in terms of that narrativization. And whereas Humankind sort of like prevented me from like going with my own flow and my own play style in some of the similar ways that Millennia does. So like, I don't think Humankind is a bad game. I was just disappointed at it because for me personally, Endless Legend was so, so very good. Mm-hmm. And I did not see that sort of pedigree and that design reflected in Humankind directly.
Well, we also asked our patrons on our Discord, 3MA. Or patreon.com/3MA, what they wanted us to discuss. One of them being like, what would a game that competes with Civ have to do to be better than Civ to us? Which Rowan, who is not on the show, gave an answer that's very much related to what we kind of just finished talking about with the art, which is to be cuter than Civ, which I think is like, it is kind of a good point. I was not a huge fan of Civ 6's art style. I think it's a little bit too cartoony for me. But it is true that, like, you know, even Humankind, I think, had a very sort of distinct art style that, you know, you have to at least be charming.
Like, I think Shadow Empires has its own look. It's grubby and old school, like, but it looks like it. It's so distinctive.
Yeah, it looks super unified. Old. So I'm not just saying Millennia is bad because it looks old. Like, I mean, you can look at it like this isn't strategy, but if you think about a game like the VVVVV, I forget how many Vs it is. Super lo-fi game, but it's super charismatic. You know, you don't have to be super detailed to be charismatic. I'll just throw that out to the panel. Like, I don't know, Ruth, would you say that Humankind did sort of surpass Civ for you, or is there something that it's missing that it would need to be better than Civ?
I feel like if I say yes to that, I'm going to be, you know, my head will end up on a pike. I do think if I look at sheer metrics at the one I have played more of in the last 2 years, It is actually going to be Humankind. Humankind is, for me personally, my Civ killer.
So what is it that keeps you coming back to Civ or to Humankind over like Civ 5 or Civ 6, do you think?
I think it is the diplomacy thing that I talked about. Yeah. It is also, I think it is just, I'm just going to sound like someone who hates combat now. I will say I like moving my little armies around in a game that really incentivizes it. Like Age of Wonders, I'm moving my little armies around. That's a moving your little armies around game. Mm-hmm. I think in Civ, I really don't enjoy moving my little armies around. When I am playing Civ, I kind of build enough of a standing army to make people not immediately bully me, and then I'm just like, please do not make me have to move these people. do not make me actually have to do anything with them.
And see, I play like you do. Like, so my first round of Millennia, I got turbo screwed by Germany. And then I was just like, okay, I guess I have to build an army to just not... For you people to leave me alone, I need to build at least a standing army in my cities. And I'll do that, but then I'm going to put them to sleep if I'm not using them. Yeah. So I feel you. I do not necessarily like the combat of it. I tend to like the research and the diplomacy and the espionage of it all.
Yeah. And like for me, that is humankind hits those notes. I really enjoy the kind of the diplomacy and the flow of it all. And I do like changing cultures. I think it actually works quite well. Because you can sort of reach a point where, like, actually, it would be really good to go from being an expansionist culture right now to being a building culture, because I can shift all my resources into this particular thing. And I like evolving that through. I'm not as much as sort of a theory crafter. I know there's, you can sort of, you know, really capitalize on sort of this unit and then this unit and this unit. And that's not really me, but I like the flexibility of sort of pivoting through what I need to do at this moment in time is this, and being able to do it. And that keeps it interesting and fresh for me.
I think there's probably some sort of a good middle ground between what humankind does, where it's like, presto, change-o, we're Chinese now. And like, again, one of the good ideas in Millennia that maybe wasn't executed great, where it's like, I'm going to pick pyramid builders as my national spirit, and now we build pyramids. Yeah. Like, some sort of a hybrid between those two things, I think might be cool.
I think humankind would probably have not put me off as much, again, if somebody else couldn't just take the thing you were aiming for.
Yeah.
Like, anytime I run into a system that's like, no, you can't play this way, I get really annoyed.
No, I play humankind with the mod that allows duplicate cultures in every age. Because I totally agree. But Mike, what would a hypothetical Civ killer need to have for you to choose it over Civ?
Man, that is a good question. I mean, like, I feel like Old World is mostly there for me now. It didn't necessarily start there, but it's mostly there. And I've been intrigued in there's one called Ara History Untold, which is coming from Oxide. Mm-hmm. That looks like going in different directions is where I really, and like I said, I go back. Endless Legend is definitely my Civ killer. And what I like about Endless Legend is, like, when you pick a civilization and the fantasy sci-fi spin of it allows them to do a lot more than civilization does, like, every civilization in Endless Legend plays vastly differently. Like, if you are picking the necrophages, now you care about combat. Now you care about creating bodies of your own and enemy bodies in order to grow your empire. I like games that allow me to have, like, pick a play style ahead of time and really specialize in that direction. If I want to play an influence game, let me do that. If I want to play a combat heavy game, let me do that. And Humankind and Millennia and both stopped me from playing the way I would like to play through some of their key systems. Like, I just can't do certain things if I want to get ahead in those games.
Yeah, I agree. I loved the nomadic gameplay in, like, the Ancient Age and Humankind. And I was like, just let me become the Scythians, and I just stay, like, I want to stay like this. I want to keep just being nomadic and wandering across the map, which Endless Legend, also made by the same studio that made Humankind, you could do that, but they went to more of like a more default Civ like gameplay style with Humankind.
Or like, you know, if I want to do a science victory, just let me pick all the, for Humankind, let me pick all the science the civs, or even, you know, say I'm doing science, I feel that's good. Maybe I want to augment with the military in one tier. Let me do that and then switch back to science. But you don't necessarily on the base game without the mod get the option to do that, because you always have to make sure that one of the other civilizations doesn't pick the path that you're trying to go down.
Luke, I do have to say, I think that in the base game of Humankind, I think you can now optionally choose to duplicate.
Excellent. Well,
that's great. That is great that they added that option. Luke, what would a civ killer look like to you?
I think the thing I'd like out of these games, and I'm like, it's weird we're talking about Humankind again here, but here we go. I'd like a civ game that can take the underlying idea that everything that you advance technologically defines the entire game experience, and the idea that it happens in clear and definite steps, so that this idea that there are ages, that there are, you go from a crossbowman to a rifleman, that you go from medieval housing to industrial revolution housing. Nearly every Civ game, and it doesn't matter if it's what era it is, sort of takes these steps and these jumps. And for me, it's always felt a little jarring. And so I'd really like a Civ game to be focused more on an organic progression, because that to me is a far more interesting way of looking at history, which is really what we're doing here. Like, if we're going to be recreating the entire timeline of human civilization, I'd like it to be more representative of the way it ebbs and flows and interacts very gradually over time, instead of this idea that everything happens in steps and that there's a clear, yesterday this was a crossbowman, today he knows how to use a Lee Enfield rifle. Like, what? No, that's like, I get the
point and
the,
shoot. It's,
I get
it's
the board so game funny. And Civ 1 rationale behind that back then, but I'd like a video game to be a bit more adventurous and sort of find ways to, yeah, just make it all blur into one long timeline of experience, instead of everything being this weirdly sort of segmented and compartmentalized. You know, it's like you don't read, human history didn't go by chapters in a book. It just goes. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like a game to be able to do that, while at the same time recognizing, like I've already said in this podcast, that the greatest strength of Civ is actually its personality, even dating back to the original Civ. And so if you can really go to town in making your communication with other leaders feel more interesting and fun and organic, so maybe just devoting more time to more varied lines of dialogue and more nuanced responses from your rival leaders, that kind of stuff as well.
And maybe find like a blend between the multiple competing civilizations having like connections. Like, I don't want to go as far as millennia, where when you jump to an age, everybody jumps to that age. But I also don't necessarily want to go back to the old Civ style, where you may have planes and the rest of the people are still rocking with spearmen. Like, there is going to be historically some bleed through over time in terms of technological progress. And I don't think either end is particularly interesting to me.
Ian, what does your Civ killer look like?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Luke was saying. And I mean, one of the reasons that I think it resonates is because, you know, this idea of history happening in these distinct epochs or eras is very backwards looking, right? Like, those are labels or bounds that have been placed on almost with a certain degree of arbitrariness, I guess. You just have to call it somewhere when the Renaissance began. But as people were living through that period, you know, there's not like, you know, yesterday we were with crossbows and now we've got arquebuses now. I mean, that's not the way that it looked. So I love this idea of going through and seeing it happen and unfold and advance organically. For me, that game is Age of Wonders 4, where I felt like everything that I was doing was having an impact on my culture and my people, where I might have, I mean, what, and it's of course a fantasy game, But like I started with one campaign with a group of like cats that used dark magic. And we wound up starting in the forest and picking up green forest magic as time went by and kind of morphing into a completely different people just as a function of the decisions and the way that I was playing the game. So seeing that kind of mentality used in a more historical, you know, setting, I think would be really interesting. I honestly, and I say that while also kind of liking the pitch for the ages system in Millennia. I just think that like what sucks is that I don't think it's like a bug fix problem, because I think that this is a neat idea that needed to like some tabletop concepting time, like in pre-production, to run into this problem where, okay, well, this, it looks like we're creating incentives to bum rush the cheapest text so that we got to fix that like as a concept before we proceed with, you know, the finer points of the design. But yeah, I have found that like when I've had the chance to kind of see my decisions kind of accumulate and accrete over time, and that's kind of what the arc of my civilization story is told by, rather than these kind of like massive arbitrary jumps to new ages. I think that's what I'd love to see in a historical game too.
Well, the answer is really easy for me. You just make Europa Universalis 4. You're done. No.
There you
I mean, like we were talking about, I would love to see a Civ game that is based on a different lens of history. We've talked multiple times on the podcast before about how the Civilization series follows this very like Whig history. History is a progression from the Stone Age to the Bronze Age, to the Iron Age, to the Renaissance. And like the peak of society is the United States in the year 1996. And then we go off to space and everything's great forever. And like, I kind of joked about it in the Discord, but like, I would love to see someone do like Karl Marx's Civilization. Like, let's just make it all about class dynamics and like social hierarchy. And like, what does that look like mechanically if you look at history through that lens, or any other lens other than this kind of
Howard Zinn's A People's Civilization.
Yes. Howard Zinn's Civilization. Yeah. Anything other than this like Francis Fukuyama end of history, like neoliberal dream utopia sort of thing that, you know, Civ does, and I think does pretty well, but there's lots of other ways to break history down. There's lots of ways you could create like a Civ game with different kinds of societies that have different kinds of objectives, I think, that could be interesting, where it's not like everybody's competing to be the United States better than the United States. Like that's kind of what the measuring stick is.
Yeah. Like, you know, what if another civilization got to gunpowder before some other, like, let me play with like historically with some of those ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing, and Ian, you kind of were starting to touch on this, but the one last thing I did kind of want to discuss with Millennia, and this is where I think I can maybe extend some grace to the developers. To me, this does not feel like a game that was given enough time to bake. And this has been like a running theme in almost every episode of Three Moves Ahead in 2024, that like, it just doesn't seem like Paradox is kind of like holding up their end. It seems like they're rushing stuff out that is like not ready. I mean, it happened with Skylines too. It like Star Trek Infinite, Lamplighters League, like this is just the latest in kind of a string of disasters. And I feel like this game could have been something way different if they gave it like another year to bake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I think that like a lot of that had to happen on the front end, right? Like on the pre-production side,
yeah,
rather than like, it's not the fit and the fit and finish needs work too, but that's not the fundamental issue with a lot of these systems. I think, you know, there's a disorganization in the UI, but I think it speaks to a lack of organization of ideas on the concept level. So, I'd love to have seen this game if it had had another year, but I wish that the year that we could add was like in the past, like they started it earlier and talked about it longer before they started coding.
It's like the difference between a game that can be fixed from the foundation, like within the same game, and a one that needs a new sequel in order to actually hammer down these ideas into something meaningful.
Yeah. Because I think it's the difference between neat ideas that just didn't get the time to get turned into good ideas before, you know, proceeding with the rest of, like, the actual production of the game.
But this makes you wonder, right. Like, what the process, like, I know Cities Skylines 2 was a disaster, but, like, it was also very clearly, like, when I played it, I ended up having to stop playing it because I tried to build an international airport in the side of a mountain, and I actually got my computer hard rebooted to the BIOS screen, which it had never done in its life.
Wow.
It was wild. And so I haven't touched Cities Skylines 2 since, but my overriding feeling playing that was, I can see the point where this becomes a good game. Like, this game came out of the oven too early, but if you put it back in the oven, it's going to be a really good Cities Skylines game. I don't understand the process involved here where someone at Paradox looked at this and went thumbs up, like, yep, good to go. Let's let people pay money for this. It'll be fine. Like, at any point. I don't understand the publishing process here at all, where what impetus was there to release this game now in March? Like, I don't understand. It's not the genre, the subject matter, the state it was in. I can't see the process at Paradox's publishing arm where this, anyone felt this was in any state to be released at all. Like,
the impetus is quite clear, and you see it also in Paralives, in that Skylines worked for them taking over the SimCity section. And they're like, what if we can do that again? And I guess Millennia was the best candidate that they had their hands on. Yeah, it definitely like came out.
But why now? Why not August or October? Or March 2025 is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, would that have made it better?
Somebody at Paradox kind of looking at this and thinking, all right, well, this isn't going to get meaningfully better between now and August.
I wouldn't have published this game. I would not have published. I wouldn't have put my name on this box.
Skylines 2 will get better. I have complete faith that will eventually be quite good. I don't feel necessarily the same about Millennia. And as a Sims player, I don't also necessarily feel the same about Paralives.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that as well. I'm very curious to try Paralives, but it gives me the same vibes Millennia did, where I'm like, I think that the things that this game thinks is wrong with The Sims are not necessarily the things that are wrong with The Sims. I wish they would stop rushing stuff out and like give people more time, even if it's in the concept stage, which I agree with Ian that that's probably where things needed more time. But even like polishing, even stuff like the fact that the roads don't line up. Like, who puts out a game looking like this?
Like, we couldn't have like, there's, I don't think there was a timeline where we go, oh, with a year this would have been a really good game, but there's definitely a scenario where another 6 months could have made it a much less embarrassing game. Like, that sort of at least tweaked some things visually to at least make it not embarrassing on every single level. Like, you could have at least gone, well, at least this was nice, or at least that bit worked, like, you know. But
yeah,
this is by the way why I love Luke and Ian, because like when you're like I'm like Lynn, I'm like, I don't want to be angry or negative about this, and I try my best to hold back. But when y'all don't like something, you just go right at it. I respect that. It's beautiful.
This is a game. This is one of the only games I've ever seen in my career where discussing it post-release with other people. Normally, like, this is some inside baseball stuff, but like, normally game critics after a game's been reviewed, you go and check out other people's reviews, and if you know them, you might talk to them and you share information and share your experiences. In the vast majority of cases, that can lead to a better understanding of the game, and you'd be like, oh, I didn't try that, or I didn't notice that, that's cool. this is one of the only games I think in my entire career I've seen where every single thing I've learned, I've been like, man, I didn't even know that was in the game, and it's bad. You're just telling me more bad things about this game. Like, no one was like, oh, dude, I know you hated it, but did you try this Dominion thing? If you did this this way, it's actually really cool. I'm like, nope. Everything I've learned has just been more bad stuff, which is, like, unprecedented.
All right. Well, I guess we should probably start wrapping up here. We'll start, Ruth, since you're our special guest this week, although you're now kind of on the council, so maybe not. Maybe not so special. Where else,
like an almond milk guest.
Where else can people find your stuff, and do you have anything to promote?
Oh, that is such a good question. I should have thought of that. I have a link tree. That's probably the most central place, because I am not on any of the social medias with short accessible handles. So the link tree is just Ruth V. Cassidy. And that will take you to all the social medias and my portfolio with long names.
All right. Ian, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a free agent now. So yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky. That's where I'll be talking about whatever I talk about. And then I did the Millennia review for Rock Paper Shotgun. So you can find that there.
You're kind of a Blue Sky minor celebrity. I think you've grown faster than any other 3MA analyst.
It makes no sense. I have no like strategy for it or anything. Like I don't get why that has worked. It's just been, I guess, making friends with a lot of the key trans posters that are on Blue Sky.
I think you also have this sort of observational comedy about current events kind of posting style that appeals maybe more to people than me yelling about Victoria 3 again.
That damn Donnie Trump wriggling out of stuff all the time.
Oh man. Yeah, let's see. Mike, anything you wanted to highlight or promote?
As always, I have absolutely nothing to promote. I don't have freelance stuff. I have freed myself from the journalistic coil. So I just have Blue Sky, where I talk about whatever pop culture stuff hits my fancy. And right now that's vintage paperback pulp novels. So Williams at Blue Sky, whatever the basic ass Blue Sky thing.
The ski dot social.
Yeah.
Luke, I believe, are you guys still doing that subscriber drive?
It never ends. Aftermath.site is an entirely reader-supported website. So, yep, always happy to welcome new readers and new readers becoming new subscribers. So, if you want to check out my Millennia impressions or any of the other, hopefully you will find good blogs that me and my colleagues are writing over there, it's aftermath.site.
Highly recommended. The Inside Baseball Week you guys just did was
seconded.
That was a fun week.
Banger after banger, really. As always, you can find us on Twitter, where we're at 3MA. We're also 3MA.bisky.social. But the running joke is that I can't remember the password, so maybe one day. We're supported by listeners like you on patreon.com/3MA, where we have welcomed a huge number of new people who came back to hear us talk about Europa Universalis 5 dev diaries for 3.5 hours. So I guess we know who our audience is. We're happy to have you. We do weekly multiplayer. Right now it's U4 and Benar, or you can just come chat with us on the Discord, which has become a fairly vibrant and active community. And I think, unless I'm forgetting something, we're hosted on the Idle Thumbs Network. Shout out to Idle Thumbs, as always, and to our Patreon producers, Mark M. and Bucktown. And that really is going to do it for this week. For how many people we have in here, for Mike and for Ian and for Ruth and for Luke, this is Len saying goodnight.